Welcome to the Northeast Divide podcast. I'm your host, John Lane, and I'm joined, as I always am, by Anth, as we talk about the two largest football clubs in the Northeast. And this week, we're going to touch on a third Northeast football club, and no, it's not Middlesbrough. We'll be talking about something I think that is probably upset a few fans in the Northeast, and we'll get on to that later. If you're watching on YouTube, please like the video if you like it. If you don't like it, please give us comments and tell us why you don't like it. And we're also at Northeast Divide on Instagram and X, so please get us your comments and your feedback there. And yeah, we'll take it from there. So, Anth, it's been a while since we last got together, because obviously I was away visiting Mickey Mouse with the kids last week. Missed Bruno Guimarães, but if you're paying attention to our socials, you'll see that I managed to get a picture with the kids with Jordan Pickford. So that, yes, that was good. it's been a really mad couple of weeks. So just to kind of recap the results that that we've had since then. So Sunderland played West Brom away from home, beat them 1-0, and that was on the same day that Newcastle beat Spurs 4-0 at St James's Park. The following week, which was Saturday gone, lost at home 1-0 to Millwall. And basically what's happened is you've secured your championship status, but then you've also secured the fact that you can't get out of the championship through the playoffs. So at the minute, we are literally, you've got Watford to play on Saturday, and then the last game of the season at home at Sheffield Wednesday. And it is all about pride now. That's kind of where we are.
It is indeed, John. Anyway, bonjour. Nice to see you after your trip away.
Merci.
Hope you had a great time. Can I just begin by saying, first and foremost, RIP Charlie Hurley, former Sunderland player, the King, as he was affectionately known as on the Fulwell end and throughout the other parts of the ground at Roker Park, the faithful. And also, he was voted our Play of the century. He's sadly passed away today, aged 87. So RIP and condolences to the family. Absolutely. Very sad.
Yeah, but echo those sentiments, Anth. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much, John. It's been a funny old sort of couple of games for both Newcastle and Sunderland, hasn't it? West Brom away exceeded all expectations, to be fair. I mean, if they hadn't had a man sent off, I dare say we might have just got a draw or, you know, whatever, a defeat possibly. But we won, and I thought, you know what, we're getting towards the end of the season. We're hitting a bit of form, but at the wrong time of the season. But then, just as Sunderland always do, a pretty woeful performance against Millwall on Saturday. And I mean, we created very little. There was no clear-cut chances as such. We were very lacklustre. And apparently, Dodd said he was bored watching the team. Now, I like all that. I like all that because it was absolutely terrible. It was incredibly boring. But I'm sorry, he put a defensive team out with five at the back. And to be honest with you, I think the only player that came out with any kind of sort of, you know, plaudits or pats on the back was AJ. So I just think, you know what, be careful what you're saying, Dodds, because the fans are starting to turn. I mean, he's still up there in the managers, sort of, you know, with regards to the list of names being reeled off, and there's a hell of a list which I can reel off in a short while if you want. Just incredibly lackluster, and I don't understand, because players should be putting themselves in the window, the ones who are rumored to be gone. And players should be fighting for a place in the first 11 next season. And there was none of that. None of that.
I think it must be really difficult, because it's clear that he's, like, you know, with all due respect, I'm sure he's a nice bloke. And Mike, you might be watching. And if you are, you know, I mean this with the greatest respect. I don't think that he's ever been in the owner's mind to take on the job permanently. Very much a, you know, give it to him till the end of the season, and just kind of see where we go from there. And I think that's a challenge for him. It's a challenge for, like, the other players going to get behind that. I think once they'd lost a couple of games and they were 10 points off the playoffs, it was just about, you know, and they had enough, you know, we kept saying it on this pod, you know, got enough points that they're probably not going to go down. That's mathematically the case when you beat West Brom the other week. And now you're in a position where you can't catch the playoffs. So it's very, you know, you're going to finish mid-table. But, Anth, would you have taken that at the start of the season? Because, you know, what's this, your second season back in the Championship?
It is indeed. And yes, John, I would have taken that. And like we've touched on this before with regards to how we overachieved last season. And I think the expectations were very high this season and unrealistically so, because it was inevitable that so-called bigger clubs or clubs in the Premiership would come looking for our players who performed so well last season. And that's what's happening. I don't know if it's unsettled a few. We know that there's going to be a few leaving. I would have taken that. And when Dodds was first given a chance, interim manager, he did really well. This is, again, second time in the Championship, but the record doesn't read well. 11 games, 2 wins, 3 draws and 6 defeats. It's the manner of the defeats as well, which is starting to get the supporters riled, and he's getting criticised now, whereas before, he was sort of slightly immune from the criticism. So, but yeah, I would have snatched, you know, people's hands off mid-table, and that's where we're going to end up. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose, I think consolidating yourself as a Championship side after spending 3 or 4 years in League Two, forget how long it was, I think it's 4, wasn't it? Years in League Two. League One even, sorry. God, yeah, I'm trying to relegate you again.
Don't do that, John, please.
You do that yourselves, it's fine. No, but I think that's got to be seen as a positive, I think, that actually you're in that position. And I don't think you've got the best, you know, a very strong budget in that division. And I sometimes think the owners have maybe made it difficult for themselves by overpromising. There was talk from the ownership that the aim was for automatic promotion this year. And if you look at Burnley and you look at Sheffield United, I think, are the best example. If you go up at the wrong time, it can absolutely screw you at the same time, because they just haven't been competitive this year. They got promoted and then they sold their best player to one of their relegation rivals. I mean, what the fuck? Why is that ever seen as an option? And I'm assuming the answer is because they're skint and that, you know, try not, you know, I haven't got Kieran Maguire on the show this week, so I'm not going to go too deep into financial fair play and PSR and everything else, but that's got to be kind of leading these clubs. And you know, you can see why Forrester are aggrieved at a points deduction, because they literally had to rebuild a squad after half their squad was low knees. And yes, they went a bit fantasy football with it, but they tried to give it a go to stay in the league, and it's bitten them on the arse now. But what are clubs meant to do? Just, you know, they're just meant to go up and then just come straight back down, because that's the order of things. And you know, I think there's probably 10, 12 clubs in the Premier League that'll be like, yeah, that's exactly what we want. We don't want these clubs staying up. So it's about putting yourselves as a club in a position where you can go up and then you can stay up. And that's the hard bit. So it's not the promotion, don't get me wrong, will be very difficult. And again, when you look at, you know, when Burnley, Luton probably and Sheffield United, you expect it's going to be those three, maybe Forest, when they come down. Their finances will be vastly different. So they will have a chance to go again and they'll have a big advantage over the other clubs. And we've seen that this season with Leicester, Leeds being so far ahead of the rest. Southampton probably not, as you know, just kind of drifted away from that group, haven't they? And Ipswich are obviously there to try and spoil the party. And may still go up automatically. But if they don't go up automatically again, they've got a hell of a job on their hands to you know, make sure that they get there ahead of Southampton, who, again, have had the advantage of not just parachute payments, but, you know, big money for big players like, you know, James Ward-Prowse and what have you. So that's the challenge, isn't it? How do you consolidate? How do you build yourself into a position where you can be sustainable and almost go up like that Brighton 2017 side, sorry, who got promoted and they were set up. Brentford, I think, you know, again, another great example of a club that's been built well with solid foundations, and now that they're in the Premier League, they're actually in a position where they're able to stay there and be sustainable. So that's what you've got to aim for. So the other game that I forgot to mention was Newcastle played Palace last night. So I watched that in the True Faith office with the guys from there, and we did a podcast straight after. And my God, it's one of the worst games of football I've seen us play for a while. And Palace were excellent. Pressed really well, looked really drilled, everyone understood the task, everyone's playing for the manager. And it was just really disappointing because we'd had a 10-day gap. So we hadn't played since we'd whacked Spurs 4-0. And Eddie Howe played the same formation, same players as he did against Spurs. And it was kind of baffling for us because Lewis Hall was back on the bench and seemingly fit. There's reports after the game that Livramento, although he's on the bench, was there almost as like a, we don't really want to bring him on, but if we need to, we'll bring him on kind of player. And I think the bit I struggled with, and we talked about this last night on the pod, is why have we played the same kind of system, which was a really good solution, and not having the right players against Spurs, and rather than playing that 4-3-3 that we've played for the majority of Howe's time here, with a recognised left back or a recognised right back, and trying to kind of like had faith in that. But I think combined with that, none of the players turned up either. It was terrible. So it puts us in a position where, I mean, look, we're not in a bad position, is what I would say about it. So if we look at kind of where Newcastle are, so we're in seventh place in the league now after Man United beat Sheffield United 4-2, the jammy bastards. So we're 3 points behind them with five games to play, but one of the games is at Old Trafford against them. So, I mean, what's your, from the outside, Anth, you know, am I right to be kind of aggrieved at kind of like last night and how that went?
Yeah, I mean, after the result against Tottenham, which I think surprised even yourself, which was a fantastic result, I thought you would have went to Selhurst Park and got a result, but it just didn't turn out that way, did it? I haven't seen the highlights or on your team's sort of side, the lack of highlights. Crystal Palace were well organised, well drilled, as you say, and played really well. I'm not a massive fan of Crystal Palace. I'll not go into the long, drawn-out details or list as to why I'm not a fan of Crystal Palace. But I'll tell you that in private someday if you've got about 2 hours to spare. But they did a job, man. They did a job. And, like, yeah, I mean, obviously, they get very good support at home. The Crystal Palace Ultras, I'll not get into that either anyway. But really good support at home. Maybe it's that, you know, got them across the finishing line. But they played as a unit. They played as a team. They were well drilled. They all knew what was expected of each other. And unfortunately, last night Newcastle were a bit disjointed, weren't they?
Yeah, we just nobody was on form. Like Isak was getting the ball and he was having about five or six touches, and then not. You know, the opportunity to shoot was gone. We kept trying the same kind of out ball we did for Spurs, like the long ball, and it just wasn't working in the same way. And like, you know, Palace defended it really well. And I just, yeah, it felt like we almost expected to turn up and win, which is really disappointing. Like, that's not kind of the way we've been used to the last couple of years. We've been used to very much, no, you're going to have to turn up, you're going to have to perform. And if you do that, then the chances and the results should follow off the back of that. But that was, I think for me, that was the disappointing bit. It was what like we could have done and what we failed to do. But we've got five games left. We play Sheffield United on Saturday. We beat them 8-0 the last time we played them. So I think, you know, I think we've got a good chance of getting a decent result against them. We then play Burnley the following week, and Burnley are not a great side, but it's, you know, we've got to go to Turf Moor and get a result, and they're starting to get a bit of form. And then we play Brighton the following week, who I think have been on the beach since it's clear De Zerbi wants to go. And then we've got Man United away and then Brentford away. So we've got not a tough run, and I think we've probably got the best run in of the sides in and around us. I think Man United have got very similar fixtures to us as well. So it'll be really interesting to kind of see how it all pans out. But I fancy our chances at Old Trafford because, as I keep saying, they're shite. Like, they really are. And that cup semi-final on Sunday and that disallowed goal with the most marginal offside. Like, what's the offside by like a bloody pubic hair or something? Like, yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous decision. So maybe he was technically offside, but it just didn't feel. They talked about this on Monday Night Club on BBC, and you know, Rory Smith said it just didn't feel like. Mm-hmm. What's the words? He said it wasn't in the spirit of the game, the offside that was given. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that. Plus, it would have knocked Man United out of the cup after them being 3-0 up, and it would have been fucking hilarious. Oh. But we are where we are. They went 1-0 and then 2-1 down last night and came back to win 4-2. I just feel like they're going to shithouse their way to sixth. Like... And I hope we do, you know, if we win all our games, we do everything we can, maybe get a draw at Old Trafford. I'm hoping that's enough. That's kind of where I am. But I definitely think we're in the race for sixth still. And I think, you know, top seven gets you Europe in the Premier League now. There's no way that extra place is coming to the Premier League. So I think we can rest our laurels on that. Have you heard about Gateshead, Anth, and what's happened there?
I have, yes. I've had to do a little bit of research with regards to it. Obviously, they were originally in the playoffs and due to play Solihull Moors, is it?
Yeah.
I think they finished sixth in the table, but obviously, due to not being able to secure tenure of the Gateshead Stadium, they wanted a 10-year tenure, the National League.
Basically, what's the word I'm looking for? But basically, a promise that they can be there for at least 10 years. That's what they need for the EFL.
So there's lots of things flying around in the local press at the moment with regards to what's been said. And there was a National League statement made which stated appropriate solutions have not been put in place over the previous two-year period. And basically, with regards to obligations of EFL membership and to be eligible for promotion, etc. And I think it's just a kick in the bollocks for Gateshead supporters, because what a season they've had, man. What a season they've had. All credit to them. Fantastic. Obviously, was it Mike Williamson left and he went MK Dons? He was doing a fantastic job. So to get to the final stage of the season and finish sixth is a remarkable achievement. But apparently Gateshead Council are in the process of finding a new operator for all of its leisure venues, apparently, and its cost-cutting measures and exercises. So apparently there's a lot of arguments about politics, and with regards to a Labour MP has basically said that, the 10-year offer is there, and then there's mud being flung about saying it's Labour Council mismanagement. So I'll let you take over now. You probably know more than me. It's just it's a shitstorm, isn't it?
It's a shitstorm. I think there's a massive hypocrisy with this as well. Mm-hmm. Luton got promoted. And look, for me, brilliant. Fantastic that they went up. They then had to spend 10 million like doing certain things to their stadium in order to be a Premier League club. And that meant they had to delay playing at their home ground for a couple of weeks and all that kind of thing. Why can't we just have the playoffs, right? Why can't we just have the games? Let's see what happens. And if they go up, right, now this is your option is you either sort this 10-year deal out or you're not going to play in the EFL. And I think there'd be a hell of a lot more urgency. Don't fucking take them out of the competition.
No.
You've decided the competition like outside of, it's not been decided on the pitch. It's been decided by politicians. It's an absolute joke. Yeah. That's the thing I don't understand. Like, if Luton Stadium wasn't good enough, like, can you imagine the uproar if the EFL had turned around and said, oh, your stadium's not good enough, by the way, so actually you can't be in the playoffs? Like, they haven't even fucking been promoted yet. Like, it's like, no, we need this promise before they even go anywhere near the playoffs. It's bullshit. I'm sorry, I had to get that off my chest.
I agree.
But it just, 100%. And I think, you know, from... Look, I understand. Look, councils are being cut left, right, and centre, and I'm not going to... I don't want this to become a political podcast, so I want to be really, really careful with what I say and how I say it. But, you know, due to kind of, you know, how the country's being managed, how it's being governed, councils are having to make really difficult decisions. So Gateshead Council absolutely do have to protect themselves. They're worried commercially about what's going to happen. I think there's also a bit of short-sightedness from them, because if you ended up with an EFL club there, and the difference that could make to that, you know, that local economy and money coming in, but also, like, look, they've, their budgets is probably one of the smallest budgets in the National League. And the ironic thing is they're not in the Football League. They were voted out in 1960-something. So they've had a hell of a journey. And only about 2 or 3 years ago, they'd won the Northern League to go back into the what we would call the conference, but the National League, essentially. So, look, if there's anyone listening from a Gateshead perspective, my feelings are really strong on this. You know, we shouldn't be deciding football by politicians. It should be decided on the football pitch. And in the event of the playoffs, there's precedent to say you don't have to have satisfied all the criteria before you actually win promotion. So give clubs a chance to win promotion, then deal with it. Don't fucking make a decision outside of all of that. Right, I've had me rant about that. FA Cup replays, that's the next one. So it's been a big couple of weeks. So FA Cup replays are being scrapped from the first round, Anth.
Yep.
Thoughts?
I don't know where to start with this either, because it's just a whole nother shitstorm, and it's a hornet's nest, isn't it, with regards to smaller clubs, revenue, the chance to play at grounds they may never ever play at as professional footballers, or given the option to take the game back to their ground and sort of, you know, sort of have the home supporters see a team they might never see in the flesh supporting their team. And I think they have that taken away. That's the beauty of the FA Cup. Just squashed. That's it, isn't it? And it just shows you what everything's focused towards the Premiership with regards to cutting the replays. I know they cut the replays for the semi-finals, etc., a number of years ago, but this is the lifeblood for a lot of smaller clubs, you know, clubs in the low leagues, and I just think it's an absolute disgrace.
It's been slowly happening over the last few years, really quietly, though. So I can't remember, I couldn't tell you what years it happened, but I don't know if you realised this year that after the fourth round, there was no replays. So it was the fifth round onwards was decided on the night. So it slowly happened really quietly. No one's made a lot of noise. It's like, oh, no, quarterfinals, that's now no replay. No, fifth round, that's now no replay. So look, I'm not going to say that it wasn't coming. It was clearly coming because it's slowly been happening. I think for me, this feels like a £33 million bribe by the Premier League to scrap replays, because that was the statement. We're going to give you 33 million quid. Great. Fantastic. What's happening with that exactly? Where's it going to? Oh, it's going to grassroots and lower levels, which apparently also includes parachute payments, right? Mm-hmm. Now, one area that does not need strengthened further is the parachute payments going from the Premier League into the Championship. Like, it doesn't. There's already too much of a disparity there in terms of trying to make sure that the Championship's competitive. I think that the parachute payments, the way that it's done, kind of, I think it promotes like really poor financial management. I believe a couple of former owners of yours were basically planning to use the parachute payments to essentially buy the club. Right? I think that was the rumoured plan. So I think, look, I think that kind of idea. So I think the bit for me is, if you're going to put £33 million into grassroots, I can't be a bad thing, more money from the Premier League going to the grassroots, but it did it look like a £33 million bribe. Then the one by one EFL clubs, like absolute heroes, kept on coming out individually and saying, well, we were never consulted on this. We didn't, you know, we were never told what was going on, blah, blah, blah. And I think for me, that just says everything. Like, this was decided by a small group of clubs.
Yep.
Now, there's a couple of different solutions I've heard, right? And I'd love your thoughts on these. So the first one is, I've always had the feeling that when it got to a point where we were playing, like, you know, teams started playing second string sides in the third round of the FA Cup, right? There's some, you know, there's something wrong with that. And then it was clear that these clubs didn't want to replay because they don't want to play. I think at the start of the competition, you should say, my preference is no replay. Okay. So every club gets a preference to say, yes, I'd like a replay. No, I wouldn't. If both clubs say they don't want a replay, decide it on the day. If one club has said they want a replay, it would be a replay if it's a draw. Because I think that way it would reduce the fixtures. It would mean that like-minded clubs would have it decided on the day. That's what they decide to do. And then it means that there's still the opportunity for clubs that want that chance of a replay to have that if they get a draw and they manage to earn that big money tie. So I think that's one solution. The other solution I've heard is that with the FA Cup draw, the lowest ranked team gets to decide whether at home or away. So you still have a bit of a draw, but actually then you make a decision to say, right, well, okay, I want to play. If you draw Man United at home, you get the option to say, well, actually, I want to play them at their place, because then that's going to be a massive payday. So it gives that option. And then I think Alan Shearer made the suggestion of levelling out the TV money. So regardless of whether you're on TV or not, basically spread the money out and try and redistribute some of that money, or maybe look at the winners of the FA Cup get £2 million. So actually, do you reduce that? Because do Man City or Arsenal, or I don't know, they're not in the FA Cup anymore, but do Man City or Man United need £2 million from winning the FA Cup? Not as much as, like, you know, a lower league club could do with that money if it was spread more. So I think there's definitely other things they could do. If they're adamant about scrapping replays, there's other ways around this, while still trying to capture some of that magic. But it's a massive disappointment. And you know, there's, I think Exeter had said at some point that they had an FA Cup replay against Man United, and that basically sorted out their financial mess.
Yeah.
Whereas the Premier League clubs are worried that they might have to play a couple of extra games, and it literally has got to the point where it's a couple of extra games. So I'm baffled that we got there, but I'm not surprised that we got there at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, same. Do you know what? It's a case of, again, be careful what you wish for. I mean, when you mentioned the VAR with Manchester United, Coventry City, I mean, that was proper Roy of the Rovers stuff, wasn't it? And I mean,
incredible.
I think everyone was up and out of the seats. And I mean, for them to come back the way they did, I'll give them small plaudits and pats on the back and a bit of credit. Like, but because again, Coventry City is at the top of my list of clubs that I'm not overly keen on, for very obvious reasons that I won't go into, Jimmy Hill. So I just think, yeah, be careful what you wish for. And I know that they want to cut the replays and sort of, you know, fixture congestion, etc. But it's just I fell in love with the FA Cup again after a few years. I didn't really watch much of it until further down the line. And over the last few years, I've been watching it again from the early stages with regards to matches shown on the BBC on a Saturday afternoon, not big clubs involved, to a few of the Championship clubs coming into it and Premiership clubs. And I've loved it. I've absolutely loved it. I think the magic of the FA Cup's been back the last few seasons, and now it's just been whipped away. Whipped away.
It's really, is it not really helped as well? It's all been on BBC and ITV.
Massively so.
As well. Because I think that hooks loads of people in. And I think this is the bit that a lot of kind of sports, you know, whether it's, you know, football or rugby or Formula One or whatever. Like, I don't think Formula One is anywhere near as much of a popular sport now. It's all on Sky.
Yep.
The coverage is excellent. And this isn't a plug for Sky Sports F1, but, you know, the coverage is really good. But it's not as popular in the UK anymore, because it's not on TV every Sunday. It's not on, like, you know, you haven't got like Fleetwood Mac playing the theme tune, and then you're watching it on a Sunday afternoon. So I think there's a lot to be said for that, that it's drawn a lot of people in. So it was disappointing to see that TNT were taken. You know, they've kind of sold the rights to them again and what have you. I think the other thing to talk about, fixture congestion and these poor big elite clubs, is that they're about to play in an expanded Champions League, which is going to have more fixtures. So it's not even going to reduce the workload. It's just going to move the workload to a more lucrative pot, essentially. So again, thank you, hypocrisy of football. and that's what we're seeing, and that's why these things are being driven. But look, there's so many stakeholders that just didn't have a say in these decisions, and the sooner that there's a independent football regulator that can help manage the situation, rather than essentially everyone bound out to the Premier League because they've got the money and they're just going to pay them off, the better. Right, I want to. It's really jolly podcast, this.
It is.
So the other thing that happened in the last couple of weeks is Newcastle United announced their season ticket price for the following season. Basically, what they announced is that adult tickets were going up 5%. Children's tickets are going to stay frozen, which always welcome. Not going to criticise the club for kind of keeping them where they are. So just as an example, a season ticket in the family enclosure is around £86-87 for a child under the age of 18, which is fantastic value. That's around about £3 or £4 a game. Mm-hmm. So look, you can't argue with that. Adult season tickets that aren't part of the Mike Ashley legacy price freeze scheme are going up 5%. And the general on the day tickets haven't been announced yet, but the cup tickets have been, and the domestic cups are going to stay the same price as they did last season. So that's a freeze. So that's going to be £30 for an FA Cup game, or £20 for a League Cup game, or half for kids. If you're going to buy it on the day, if you're lucky enough to get a ticket on the day, which I just don't think happens at Newcastle anymore, it's going to cost you a five or more. So I think they've made some good decisions. However, I can't get my head around why we needed to put up this price 5%. I don't get it.
Do you know, ours have gone up allegedly 7%. And, I mean, the ticket...
No price, way!
Yes, apparently, increase of 7%. And, I mean, just to give you an example, at the moment, they've got the early bird renewal scheme, which if you renew before the 3rd of May, it'll be the same price as it was for this season, which is
okay.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. After that, they do go up the prices. So yeah, and it is allegedly 7%. And I mean, obviously the prices will differ for Premiership to Championship with regards to the level of football being served up, etc., and the standard of football, the quality of it. So yeah, but I mean, for example, I think the cheapest season ticket we've got for an adult at the moment is £420. And it can go up to £790, is it? So yeah, we've got the under 22s, under 18s, under 16s, over 65s, which are all very, very competitively priced. And like you've just said there, with regards to the under 16s, I think it's £55 for a season ticket in certain parts of the ground. Wow. which is unbelievable value. So yeah, but obviously, we don't want to talk politics, the cost of living, etc. But if you've got two kids, you're taking them along to a football match now, be it Premiership, Championship, League One, whatever, it's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost a lot of money. You've obviously got the replica shirts, etc. I mean, when they come out at the start of the season, again, more money. So it's difficult because, you know, everything's going up in price. So I think Newcastle United have done quite well based on that. If it's only 5%, 7%, if that is true, that's what I've read, some reliable news sources, and looking at the different pricing for this season, next season, it looks that way. So it's just the way it is, isn't it? It's just life. But unfortunately, it's the supporters that obviously cater for the cost of that. So yeah.
I suppose there's an advantage if you're already a season ticket holder, and if you're sharp on it, then actually you're going to get a freeze, right? And actually, any way of them getting a freeze is a good thing. As I say, we've got about 20,000 season ticket holders that are on a long-term freeze, and next season will be their last season on that freeze. The year after, they're all expecting a massive jump, but they're not just doing a massive jump. So at the minute, you can pay that ticket over a 12-month period on a direct debit. And they're going to standardise it, so it's always an 8-month direct debit. So you could go from paying, say, and I'm plucking figures out, right, and I haven't got the exact monthly amounts to hand, right? But let's say it's £500 for your season ticket at the minute on your price freeze scheme. If that goes up to like £800 or £900, and instead of you paying that at £60 a month, you're going to pay that over an 8-month period, of near 100 quid a month, that's one adult ticket. So that's a big jump. Now, there's the obvious joke that I'm going to make where, of course, the Sunderland tickets are going to be cheaper because the team's lower down the league and the shit and all that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. £5 for adults, kids go free, all that bollocks, free, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But look, I'm not going to criticise affordable football. Like, you know, the fact that it's the reason, but the reason it's affordable at Sunderland, and I mean this in the nicest way, is because there's empty seats there. There's empty seats there on a regular basis. There's one game that you sold out for this season in Newcastle United, were in the stadium with 6,000 seats there. And they didn't hold back on prices then. I think it was, about 32 quid an adult? Which, you know, that's fairly reasonable when you look at other ticket prices across the league. Oh, sorry, across the country, I suppose. But it's in the FA Cup. It's, you know, I just think when you look at all of it, there's things that they can do and there's things that they don't need to do. Now, anytime there's any price increase at all at Newcastle, the first thing, like I said, oh, well, you need to be in the financial regulations. Well, yes, I get that, right? But putting 5% on a season ticket is not going to make a difference to whether we're going to be able to go and sign the player we want to sign in the summer or not. It may help pay half of Bruno's wages. Like, you know, I just don't think it does. Especially when you consider that 20,000, I only think there's we've not got the official numbers on, right? So, but around 20,000 are on this price freeze scheme. I think we've only got about 30,000 season ticket holders. So really, if you're looking at it from that point of view, that 5% increase isn't as big as some people may think. It just feels like other clubs are putting their prices up by about 5%. We'll get away with doing that as well. So let's just do it. It's a little bit more on the bottom line, but I don't think it's going to make enough of a difference. It doesn't make the kind of difference for the corporate areas that they put in last season. It doesn't go anything like the Adidas deal, not even like the sleeve deal is about 7 or 8 million. So I don't think it touches any of those. So for me, it just seems like something they don't need to do, especially when they're then going to jump the ticket prices up for about 20,000 fans next year. But I think, yeah, affordable football is important, I think, is the message. And look, Sunderland need to try and attract. And I suppose when you said 7%, I couldn't believe it because of the fact that most of these games this year, you haven't sold out. So if you can't sell out, why are the prices going up?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. It's baffling. But, you know, I mean, sponsorship deals in the Championship, I suppose this is how we make a little bit more money, unlike the Premiership where the riches come, you know, flooding in. So television rights, etc. So we've got it must be difficult to try and balance it. But we don't want to alienate the supporters or the support base any further because it's been a pretty disastrous season with regards to PR, etc. So, yeah, and I mean, just a special mention with regards to our new kit there. Supplier as such, Hummel, which I'm happy with, and they
like a legacy brand for you lot, isn't it?
Honestly, very nice, very nice. They released the 1992 FA Cup final jacket and also the 1993-4 yellow third kit top, and they released 1,999 of them, and then sold out within a matter of hours. So there's absolute murders and absolute chaos with regards to that. Loads of criticism. So you can't win. You can't win. So we need to be a little bit more savvy when it comes to things like that, because there's been a lot of criticism this season. And there's another prime example with regards to that that kit release.
You know what it is, though? That's like, this is where I think like Adidas are going to make money hand over fist with Newcastle fans. Because if they just release half of like the 95 to 99 kind of kits and training wear that, you know, like they'll make millions. Like,
yep.
Oh, honestly, they'll make absolutely ridiculous amounts of money. And, you know, the fact that Hummel have done that is very, very clever of them. Mm-hmm. And it's a good direction for some going in terms of their manufacturer, because obviously it's a brand that is a fan base of kind of warm to. And that's, yeah, Adidas is similar for Newcastle, isn't it? Yep. You know, in that way. And the excitement since that was released on the Amazon documentary in September is ridiculous. And the amount of concept kits you see every other week about what the kit's going to look like, and, you know, certain podcasts saying, oh, yeah, well, we're certain this is what it looks like. I mean, we'll see. We'll see when Adidas release it. But I'm worried that's going to take away some of my football ticket money. So we will see. Right, I'm going to wrap things up there, Ant, really quickly. But just thank you very much again for joining this evening. And we've had great chat, as we always do. Next time, we are going to be reviewing Newcastle's trip to Burnley and Sunderland's trip to Watford, which I'm sure will be two thrilling games. There's be some big results. Not Burnley. Newcastle play Sheffield United on Saturday. Mm. So that's the game that we're going to be reviewing next week. So I'm just jumping weeks ahead. I don't know what's happened to us today, but look, thank you for joining. Again, if you've watched it on YouTube, please like. If you like the content that you're seeing, subscribe and it'll come up onto your feed quicker. If there's feedback about what you like or what you don't like, please leave it in the comments below. And thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.